The Westboro Baptist Church has made headlines for the noisy anti-gay picketing its members have staged outside the funerals of U.S. soldiers, shooting victims, and assorted public figures over the past 20 years. Lauren Drain estimates that she shouted slogans and carried hate-filled signs during at least 1,000 of those demonstrations during the 7 years she belonged to the Topeka, Kansas-based group. She explains how her family came to join Fred Phelps' cult-like organization and why she was kicked out of it in her memoir called Banished, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. She co-wrote it with Lisa Pulitzer, and it's from Grand Central Publishing. I'm very pleased that it has brought Lauren Drain to our show today. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. The 1,000 demonstrations you participated in sounded like a lot until I saw on the Westboro Baptist Church's website, GodHatesFags.com, that the group has staged 49,965 pickets since it was founded. That's probably already been passed because they do them regularly. Why so many?
They think that's their duty. They think that's their life's work, is to protest homosexuality and the sins of the nation.
And you write that the group has a history of welcoming press coverage and being pretty open with the media. Is one of the main objects of the picketing designed to draw press coverage of the church and its views?
Absolutely. That's a main goal, actually.
But not to recruit?
No, not to recruit.
And why don't they want to recruit members? Most churches want to grow.
Yes, most churches do. This so-called church actually has a very elitist mentality. You know, they think they're the only ones going to heaven, they're the only ones God loves, and that everyone else is doomed, and they're going to protest everyone else.
So how does the group decide which events to target?
That's a good question. Anything that supports or accepts, I guess, homosexuality, and then now they've shifted gears towards national tragedies, picketing our soldiers and such. So they've kind of broadened their scope in terms of who they'll picket.
But the soldiers whose funerals they're picketing weren't gay necessarily. In fact, most of them probably weren't.
Right.
And their faith doesn't seem to be a matter of concern. So is it just going to a place where they're going to cause a stir?
I would definitely say that is, because it's a shock value, but they try to draw the connection that this country supported homosexuality and now it's being punished in various ways, such as, you know, the soldiers' funerals and other tragedies.
Well, has this country supported homosexuality?
I mean,
there are laws on the books in many states that against same-sex marriage. Until fairly recently, the sodomy laws were applied in many states around the country.
Correct, yeah. So it has in some respects, but in other respects, no.
So, but he feels that the country is really tolerating a lot of homosexual activity?
That's how he feels, yes.
You open your book with fond memories of participating in a picket of George W. Bush's second inauguration on the Washington Mall when you were 16 years old. How long was that after your family had joined the church?
Very shortly after, maybe not even a year.
And how did your father become interested in the Westboro Baptist Church? You said that the church doesn't recruit members, and yet your family joined.
Yeah, they're not. Their methods aren't trying to recruit people. My father actually set out to do a documentary on the church, kind of an expose of their subculture, and he intended to have a mocking tone and end up spending some time with them and I guess acquiring some of their beliefs and end up bringing it back to my family and saying he wanted to join.
He was going to call the film Hate Mongers, so he had pretty strong feelings against the church.
Correct.
And do you have any idea what it was that changed his mind?
I'm not sure all the reasons. I have my theory. He probably saw a lot of the control that they exert over the members and over the children. And at that time, I don't know if it's because I was a blossoming teenager and he kind of was scared by the newfound prospect of me, you know, being around certain influential friends or what have you. But he really wanted to control me and my family. You know, he pulled me out of high school at that point. You know, he told me I couldn't be around my friends anymore.
You were 15?
14 when he started, and 15 when he brought my whole family to the church.
So is homeschooling part of the church's way of dealing with things?
Not normally. He decided that himself. He did it twice. He pulled me out of school before the church and also while I was in the church at some point. But no, most of the children are in public school.
Well, there are many repressive religious organizations in this country where people are controlled. Did Westboro have another message that your father – did your father respond to the homophobic aspect of the church or the anti-Semitism of the church?
I mean, he assimilated the beliefs right away. And at that time, their highlight was anti-gay. They hadn't really moved on to funerals or picketing other people at that time. So he definitely responded to it.
Well, you say you felt honored to have been chosen to picket at a prominent event like the presidential inauguration. So not everybody goes to every event?
No, not everyone does. I had been brainwashed. You know, I was 15 years old, apparently impressionable. I hadn't been raised in any type of religion. I had no exposure to the Bible or otherwise. And part of me really wanted to make my father proud. You know, he told me he wanted me to now be a Christian daughter who he could be proud of. And I think I was sort of manipulated into certain things and certain beliefs. And he told me that I had, you know, a life's purpose. You know, he made it very supernatural. You know, I was going to be a prophetess and this and that, and tried to manipulate me into doing and believing some of the things that we did.
And is it only Fred? His daughter Shirley is a very dynamic person, more or less runs the organization, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's very influential.
Mm-hmm. So did she have an influence on your father?
I think so. He was in constant contact with her within the first year when we were still living in Florida. You know, they spoke on the phone a lot, and she gave him a lot of advice. Yeah, so I definitely think she was influential for him.
To the point where he pulled up stakes and moved the family to Topeka.
Yep.
You've written that during your early years in the Westboro Baptist Church, you loved joining the pickets. What made picketing so attractive to you?
Like I said, I was young. I was able to be brainwashed into this method of thinking. They have this whole elitist mentality that they thought they made me part of. You know, I was thinking that, you know, I was one of God's elect. I was a good Christian girl, and that this is the way I needed to serve God. This is the way I made my father proud. I made my family proud. And I thought it was the right way. I'd never been taught something different in terms of religion or the Bible. And I'd just now been exposed to the Bible. And I was actually really enjoying a lot of the messages it had. And I just hadn't questioned how much harm and damage I was really doing until a little bit later on, which... Yeah, I started asking questions a little bit later on in terms of how dare we say some of the horrible things that we were saying at the pickets. But, you know, indoctrination is a very strong thing.
Well, people were yelling at you. Did that make you feel good, feel self-justified, or did it cause you to doubt sometimes?
That's an excellent question. At the pickets, you know, we were taught to have certain retorts. And when people would yell at us, or if they would say, you know, that's not what God says, God's full of love, or this or that, you know, we were taught to say, you know, back to them that that there are hate in the Bible and this and that. And, you know, we had such an arrogant stance on things. You know, there was no listening to questions. There was no arguing with us because we had the authority on the Bible. It was very, very sanctimonious, and we were taught to be that way, to be defensive and to not allow anyone to question us.
My guest is Lauren Drain, who's written with Lisa Pulitzer, Banished, a memoir, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. It is published by Grand Central Publishing. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. After your family moved to Topeka, didn't you develop a close relationship with Shirley Phelps as well?
Yes, yes, I did.
She became kind of a mother figure?
Yes, yes. See, the thing is with a cult, and I don't know all the others, but I know that in this particular one, there's two sides to people. You know, they have this hard exterior, this judgmental, hateful side. And on the inside, to keep its membership, they have a very tender, nurturing side. And, you know, I saw that. And whether it was their human nature to be that way, and maybe they were just shutting it out to the world, I don't know. You know, it's very possible that there are, you know, they have good hearts, but they're brainwashed into this method. Either way, I wanted to show that they're, you know, there's a dynamic here, and this is what keeps the members in, is they see like a unifying, loving sense on the inside, but as soon as they get kicked out or question the theology, then they're ostracized.
Well, there's a sense of family.
Right.
But you've been using the word cult. Do you think of it as a cult?
At the time, I did not. And I think I was brainwashed to think it wasn't a cult. But at this point, I know that it is.
You said that other members went to public schools, which surprises me, because usually in groups of this sort, there's a fortress mentality, they do everything possible to not expose you to other people's thinking. Were they just so secure in their feelings that the other members of the church, mostly members of the Phelps family,
right,
were firm in their beliefs that they didn't have to worry about them having being exposed to other ideas?
I think they were. They are very. They think they're confident in those beliefs. They, from the time that children are born, they're being instantly taught, you know, God hates everyone else. Everyone else is evil. From the time they can hold a picket sign, you know, they're holding picket signs. They're being exposed to this judgmental, hateful attitude towards the world. And I think by the time they're five and entering school, it's already indoctrinated in them. And for the most part, it's very effective, you know. And they're also taught and see that if they question things, they're going to get cut off from their families. And that's a very powerful motivating factor.
You said that 20 people participated in the Washington, D.C. event, the Bush administration inauguration, making it one of the group's larger protests. How many members usually participate in a single demonstration?
That was one of the larger events. So it's typically I didn't see 20 or so people at the picket. I usually would see somewhere around 4 or 5 or 6. You know, they would try to expand their money as far as they could go. So.
And often it's not funerals, but just other churches. Did they see other churches as competition?
They definitely protested churches far and wide. Like I said, they believed everyone else was wrong. Even other doctrines are wrong. And they were also a target of their protests.
Well, there must be more than one a day in some cases.
Exactly, yes. Multiple pickets a day in town, and then as much as they could do out of town or out of state.
You explained that the Westboro Baptist Church's theology is similar to fundamental Calvinism?
Yes.
Is that what it grows out of? Members believe that the people God has chosen, only the people who God has chosen, can achieve salvation, and that everyone else is doomed. That's what you've been saying. So all of the group's members are God's chosen?
That's what they believe, and there's no message of hope or forgiveness for anyone, for anything. And they think they get to decide judgment upon people, who goes to heaven and who goes to hell. It's just very judgmental and arrogant.
And if you leave the church, you go to the hottest part of hell?
Yeah, I guess they say like it was a privilege to be there, it was a privilege to be a member, and that was the only form of truth. So if you leave, then you're the worst type of sinner, so you get the most punishment.
So what about Jews? They're anti-Semitic, but the Jews have, in the Bible anyway, called the chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
Do they believe that any Jews will be saved?
I actually left before they got extreme on the Jews, and I'm not exactly sure where that all is coming from. So I guess you'd have to kind of ask them about that. But I guess I'm aware that they have some signs that say there will be Jews that believe what they believe. And that's the only thing they would accept in terms of Jews being saved would be through them.
You've been sort of suggesting that the most terrifying part of being expelled from the church, which you were 6 years ago, was because you believed that the only way for you to get to heaven was to remain in the church.
Correct. Yes.
And then, of course, there was the whole matter of being able to maintain your relationship with your immediate family.
Yes. So I was kicked out. You know, I'd been asking questions. I've been questioning the doctrine, asking certain verses. How dare we say this? How dare we say that? Clearly, the Bible does not justify everything we're doing. And anytime I'd raise a question, I was getting a lot of feedback that was wrong, that was evil. How dare I question the doctrine? You know, I'm being satanic, this and that, you know, all cult-like tactics. And at the time, you know, I also knew that if I was too bold or if I left on my own, I would be losing my family forever. And I had 3 siblings at the time, a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 16-year-old. I was not willing to abandon. I was hoping maybe to make some changes or waves while I was there. That obviously was not effective. And they kicked me out. They made an example out of me for it.
And then your family had to abide by the rules? What would happen if they discovered that somebody had contacted you to find out how you're doing?
Exactly. It's a all or nothing mentality. It's very gang-like. You know, you're either in and they love you or you're out and they hate you. So I know that my father was kind of the ringleader in kicking me out and casting me out and acting like I was never his daughter. And I saw my mom struggle with it. You know, she was crying the day it happened. And he's such a manipulating person that I'm sure
he's... You're talking about Fred Phelps or your father?
Well, both. But I was speaking of my father. I'm sure he convinced her, you know, that I was evil and this and that. And so I'm sure she... And if anyone dare spoke up in my defense, it would have threatened their membership. It would have threatened their own relationship with their family.
Well, you said that one of his concerns in joining the church was of your budding sexuality. Wasn't that the reason they actually gave for throwing you out of the church?
Yeah, it's the reason they gave.
They said you were becoming promiscuous?
It's really quite ridiculous, though, because at the time, I had graduated college. I had started speaking to someone online who was asking about the church. I'd never met this guy in person, and they decided to label that communication as fornication and cast it as a sin and cast me out.
Wait, you were 21, 22?
21, going on 22.
That's an adult. You're allowed to live your own life.
Right, but not in that place. They decide who you marry, if you marry, you know, if you believe right, if you don't, you know, they decide everything for you.
But since this is a very closed society and most members are members of the same family, doesn't that make it rather difficult to find anyone to marry?
Exactly.
And that everybody would be a first cousin at best.
I know. And that's one of my questions. I said, how do we even go about marrying someone? Clearly, we've shut ourselves off from any other opportunity. And, you know, they didn't want an outside influence. That's probably what it was about. Not only that, but they were also, at the time, I don't know if you know, there was a big lawsuit with Matthew Snyder's father against the church and the funeral protests. And they were very anxious at that time, very, very anxious about it. They thought any type of outside person was a media, you know, investigator, and they thought I was leaking information. It was all quite conspiracy theory, really, but I think they wanted to kick me out in case I leaked information.
Well, of course, you leaked information. You've written a book. But other members of the family have also left, and we'll get to that as well. Mm-hmm. But how did you wind up in contact with this young man in Connecticut?
It was like over a YouTube channel, I think. It was just, you know.
But that means you were looking to find things outside of the church to connect to.
I think actually he contacted us at first, so I was very isolated. I was in an isolated mentality, and we started communicating. But yeah, at some point I did. I wanted to speak to someone else outside.
Your father was featured in a BBC documentary that was filmed after you left the church, and he said that you were dead to him. Have you seen that documentary?
Yeah.
Were you surprised that he could be so hard?
No, I'm not surprised anymore. You know, at the time that I got kicked out, I couldn't believe that in only 7 short years, my father had completely lost any human empathy, especially for his own daughter. I didn't lose that for my family, despite having been in a hateful group for 7 years. And I didn't lose my empathy for a lot of the relationships I made in there. So I don't know how it happened to him, but he's very manipulative, and I doubt he would say anything different. You know, would threaten his own membership, and clearly that's the place he's chosen to be. So,
my guest is Lauren Drane, who has written with Lisa Pulitzer, a former correspondent for the New York Times, a memoir called Banished, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. It is published by Grand Central Publishing. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. And we are back with Lauren Drane, who's written with the help of Lisa Pulitzer, Banished, a memoir, Surviving My Years in the Westboro Baptist Church. It's published by Grand Central Publishing. As you have explained in the book, the church was founded during the 1950s by Fred Phelps, who became its pastor. He and his wife had 13 children?
Yes.
Oh, and it's his children and their children who make up most of the members of the church.
Yes. Some of them have since left, but yes, mostly his children and their children.
And have any others joined, or is your family the only outsider group that joined?
They had some Hockenbergers and they had some Davises, but most of the members, I think, have either been kicked out or left. So it's mostly the Phelps and Drains left.
And you said that the members of the Phelps family were treated much more leniently than you were. Weren't they allowed much more freedom in how they dressed and what they were allowed to do?
I have a couple comments about that. First of all, yes, I think the Phelps were a lot, they were a lot more lenient on the Phelps. There's things that I, you know, even bring up in Banished about how they, you know, they stepped out of line or according to like church rules, you know, they had, you know, children outside of marriage and such, and they weren't kicked out forever. And yet certain small little details, you know, about my behaviors and such would raise alarm and all these things. So I not only saw that, but other members were threatened and kicked out too. I saw some Hockenbergers kicked out. I saw some Davises kicked out, you know, separated from their families instantly, you know, instantly away from their families and forever. I saw a lot more of the Phelpses, I'm sorry, a lot, the Hockenbergers and Davises than the Phelpses get kicked out. I did see Phelpses leave on their own, but most of the time they were encouraged to stay. And, you know, the pastor has two sides. Much like any cult leader, they have a very charismatic side sometimes. And he would constantly be asking his granddaughters and grandsons, "You won't leave me, will you? You know, you're not going to go to the world, you know, and go to hell. You're going to stay here with me." A lot of, like, cult-like tactics. But I saw some of those things. And my other comment to that is they had indoctrinated me with such a judgmental perspective that I even judged my very own friends, even inside the church. And I think that was awful and cruel and not right, you know, to the point that even my little sister judged me for small little things.
Say judge, you mean they'd bring them up at class, at church meetings?
Yeah, that. And, you know, there's a lot of telling on each other. Everything you do is scrutinized as a sin. You know, you don't have freedom of thought. You don't have freedom to do certain things because you're constantly threatened that you're going to be kicked out if you do or say something wrong.
Hadn't Shirley had a son out of wedlock when
Shirley
she was younger?
Had, yes. A couple of the other members have as well. They've also had other. They also completely overlook some other things. You know, they decide which sins are wrong or not wrong, and if they want to kick you out, they'll find something to say it over. It's just all very hypocritical.
Well, you suggested earlier that one of the reasons you were treated so harshly was because of your father's attitudes.
Yeah, he definitely, and I didn't even know the full extent of his manipulation, and I'm just now finding out some of the more manipulative things he's done. He would play with my head. One second he'd tell me I'm being, you know, a good Christian girl. The next second I knew he was telling on me on things that I had done. And in the end, I saw he wanted to make an example out of me.
And what does he do for a living?
At this point, I'm not really sure. He was working for an insurance company at one point before that.
So he
that,
gave up filmmaking.
He was working for a production company at one point, and I think he lost his job. And I've heard he lost his job again.
Well, I get the impression from the book that your early years in the church community were really very happy ones. And is that the way you remember them? You became close friends with several of Fred Phelps' granddaughters.
So I had been completely isolated that previous year to joining the church. You know, my father took me out of high school, took me away from my friends. And when I first joined, you know, there were good personalities. You know, I met with the Phelps's granddaughters. They're very kind to me. And I, you know, being a teenager and wanting to make friends, I did. I made fast friends with them. But, you know, I was too young. I was very impressionable. I was being indoctrinated, these hateful things. And it wasn't until years later that I was able to really question some of the things that we did and how harmful they were.
Well, what was your day-to-day life like?
Day-to-day life. You know, there was no...
You weren't going to school?
We went to school. We went to public school. There wasn't a lot of freedom of activities. There was no hobbies. There was no dating. We weren't allowed to dress a certain way. We couldn't, you know, we couldn't cut our hair. We weren't allowed to wear makeup. So we were very, you know, basically what we filled our time with for extracurricular would be like, you know, sports and such. But other than that, it was the picketing that we focused on.
Fred Phelps delivered a sermon every Sunday. Did you understand what he was saying?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I was being indoctrinated into believing the things that he was saying. You know, he would support some of his hateful speech with certain verses, and he would say that, you know, the reason we're right is because, you know, we're hated by everyone and we're so persecuted. And, you know, he'd play the martyr card and say that this is the only right way. And he did skip over passages. He did completely skip over verses and the hope and the forgiveness that is taught. So at the time, I was buying into it. And it just shows you how strong brainwashing can be on children, even at the age of 14 or 15.
And then when did you start noticing inconsistencies?
Probably right around the age of like 19 or 20. You know, I'd read things on my own, and I started getting a little more bold. You know, I was more confident, and I would ask my mom and ask my father, and I assumed that they would be interested in a sincere question, especially when it comes to doctrine. I got a lot of pushback from it. I was called divisive and evil and all this such things. So I knew right away that that was not accepted.
Now, how aware were you of what was going on in the world around you? Did you watch television? Did you read newspapers and magazines? Did you listen to pop music?
Yes, we were actually able to watch TV, listen to music, those typical things. I know that's kind of shocking because a lot of cults have no access to outside influence. But as long as you maintain their doctrine, you know, chant what they say and continue the hateful mantra, then you're okay to be exposed to those things.
Well, although Fred Phelps preached that God hated many groups, including Jews, Catholics, Muslims, soldiers, the media, he seemed certain that God hated homosexuals the most. Do you have any idea of why he was so homophobic?
At the time, I didn't know. He would continue to support, you know, say it's biblically supported and this and that, but he really only focused on that one sin. And I always wondered why he was so obsessed with that one thing. And it didn't really dawn on me until later. I remembered a story he had told me, well, told the congregation, I guess you could say, that when he was younger, he'd always wanted to join the military. You know, he had kind of made it his life's work to do so, and ended up going to West Point for a few days. And for some reason, he made an about face. He changed his mind. Now he had a profound religious experience of some kind, decided to become a preacher against sexual immorality, and ever since then has hated both military and homosexuals.
So the suggestion is that he had some experience, and he's refused to answer questions from the media about whether he ever had a homosexual experience.
He gets pretty angry when asked that question. Most questions, you know, he'll answer, but he will not answer that question.
You write here that it was the church's picketing at the funeral for Matthew Shepard, the gay student who was killed in Army, Wyoming, that brought the group to national attention. After that, didn't the church target the funerals of people who were known to be gay and who died of AIDS?
Yeah, they definitely did start doing that.
And that was because they were known, because that would fit in with this whole concept. I mean, naming your website GodHatesFags.com is pretty specific.
Yeah, they did target homosexuals. That was the beginning of everything. So,
Well, something you point out in your book that many people probably are unaware of is that Phelps and 11 of his 13 children are trained as lawyers and earn their livings practicing law as members of Phelps Chartered, the family law firm.
Mm-hmm.
So the knowledge of law has influenced the way they've gone about picketing?
I definitely think so. I mean, also their attitudes. They're very arrogant. They're very, like, everything. As long as they can find a verse that supports something, it's just like, I don't know. It's you can see the attorney in them. And when it comes to the picketing, they use and abuse the freedom of speech and freedom of religion and to promote their message. And they've continued to do so. So.
And have they defended themselves in court cases? The one went to the Supreme Court. Snyder versus Phelps.
Right. Yes, they have defended themselves in that using the freedom of speech clause.
Were you still in the church when that case was decided?
I got kicked out right before it was decided. It's funny you ask that. One of the church members, Margie Phelps, she actually was a defendant in that case, said that I might be, you know, leaking information to the media at the time, and they needed to cut me off just in case so they didn't lose the lawsuit and this and that. And it was really quite interesting.
Well, they thought that you were the reason. But how did the court decide?
How did the court decide? I didn't follow the case.
Snyder versus Phelps.
I didn't follow the case too closely, but I knew the outcome. And the Supreme Court did decide that in favor of the Westboro, and that they do have the right of freedom of speech, despite how despicable it is at funerals.
Although there are some communities that are now trying to pass laws that would make it harder for Westboro to picket. Mm-hmm. You were working as a nurse at the time that you were thrown out?
Yes.
And you did not want to go.
No.
Despite all the problems, you didn't want to go.
I didn't want to go because I had been questioning things, but I hadn't reached the point where I was determined to leave my family. I didn't want to abandon my little siblings. I had thought at the time maybe I could slowly raise questions and kind of bring things up from within. But I definitely saw inconsistencies. I definitely saw things that were wrong. And ultimately, after I got over the trauma of leaving my family and who I thought I would never be in contact with again, I was able to move on and realize that this is not the way Christians are. This is not the way, you know, to be. And I am so thankful that I got kicked out.
But at the time, you would have been happy if they had allowed you to defend yourself and then stay.
At the time, if I could raise questions and say the inconsistencies and stuff, at the time probably, but over time I would have left. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to continue to do those horrible things. You know, they continue to protest funerals and children's funerals, and I was greatly upset by that.
On the other hand, you stayed in Topeka for 6 months, continued to work at the hospital, living at first in a hotel and then moving into an apartment with the idea that maybe they would take you back.
It's a very traumatic experience to lose your family, to know for a fact you're cut off from them forever. I mean, you have to understand, not only that, I was brainwashed. I thought God was going to kill me. They told me God was going to give me a horrible disease, that I'd die, that I'd go to hell. A part of me still was brainwashed, despite knowing inside of me there was something wrong with it. I wasn't fully deprogrammed from that line of thinking, and that just shows you how strong brainwashing can be.
And you had panic attacks, worrying that you would be doomed for eternity into hell. How did your parents react when you called them and begged them to help you rejoin the church?
So I called my mom after having one of my first panic attacks, and I just said, "Mom, I'm scared. I miss you guys. I love you guys. Is there a chance I can see you again? You know, and if so, how long?" She gave me no sign of hope, no sign of forgiveness, and that's when I realized I had been cut off from my family, and there was no hope, and that is a very scary thing, to know that you're not going to communicate with your family even over a false doctrine, even over something you don't believe anymore. It's hard to let go when you know your family's still there.
You've moved to Connecticut to be near the young men who got you in all that trouble. Do you continue to see yourself as a Christian?
I do, yes. Thankfully, I still believe in God, and I have much better understanding of who he is now.
One member of a number of members of the Phelps family have left, but one has become an outspoken critic of the church. Have you been in contact with her?
Which one?
Now I'm trying to remember. I just read a news story recently where I think a Phelps niece just has went against everything that the church stands for.
I've definitely been in contact with some of the people who have left. The most recent being Shirley's daughters, Megan and Grace Phelps Roper. We support each other a lot. We know a lot of what we both have gone through. But we've mostly denounced the things the church has taught us.
And what about your siblings? Have you been able to be in contact with any of them?
No, my father will not allow it. And he'll pretty much say anything and everything I say is a lie, but it all goes hand in hand with his manipulation.
And that'll be true as long as they remain in the church.
You know, I hope part of the reason I wrote this book is because I knew I had no contact with them. I miss my siblings terribly. They have no hope of knowing another life, knowing that God's different than who he is, and knowing that the world is not as evil as they depict it. And I wanted to be able to give them outside perspective and some hope.
Lauren Drane's book is called Banished. She wrote it with the help of Lisa Pulitzer. Banished, a memoir surviving my years in the Westboro Baptist Church. It is published by Grand Central Publishing. And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me.